From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening to this special edition for the 2025 Wilmington City Council election. This year, there are three open seats on council, and we have eight candidates, including six challengers and two incumbents. We also have three candidates for mayor, including our incumbent mayor. While the city council race is technically nonpartisan, the local Democratic and Republican parties do play a role in supporting candidates. For city council, we have three Republican candidates, one unaffiliated candidate, and four Democratic candidates. Although the County Democratic Party implemented a straw poll to narrow its support to three of those candidates and one of the two Democrats running for mayor. And we'll have more information about all of that on the show page. On today's show, we're interviewing Republican incumbent Luke Waddell, who is running for his second term on city council. And we'll ask him a host of questions drawn from listeners and readers and our community agenda program. All right, Luke Waddell, candidate for re-election to the City Council of Wilmington. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
It's been a minute, yeah. So before we get into the policy stuff, we've been asking all the candidates just to, you know, say a little bit about yourself, let people know who you are.
Great. Yeah. Again, thanks for having me. My name is Luke Waddell. I've had the privilege of serving on Wilmington City Council for the last 4 years, so I'm coming up to the end of my first term and running for re-election. Originally, I was born and raised in New Bern, North Carolina. I moved here directly after college, and Wilmington has been home ever since. Started my business here, met my wife here, you know, and started our family here. So I'm a husband, a father of two young boys, Luke Jr., and most recently, young Sterling, who is 13 weeks old. So it's busy time at the moment in the Waddell household. I am a business owner, and serving the people of Wilmington over these last 4 years has been certainly one of the greatest honors and privileges of my lifetime, and it's a responsibility I take very seriously and look forward to doing for another 4 years.
All right. We've also been asking all the candidates, because this is technically a nonpartisan race, but it's often the first question that pops up when people's, you know, image pops up on that New Hanover County Board of Elections page. So what party, if any, are you affiliated with and why?
Yeah, my political affiliation is I'm affiliated with the Republican Party. I'm a registered Republican. Throughout my time in office, I've made it a priority to be direct, transparent, and certainly accessible to everyone that I represent. That's kind of the beauty of local politics, is that most things really aren't viewed through a partisan lens. And really what you're doing is solving problems for your friends and your neighbors throughout the city. And that's one of my favorite things about being in office.
All right, let's get into it. One of the first issues we hear about when we're out in the community is affordable housing. And fair range of debate about what that actually means and how it should be tackled. So, you know, at a high level, how do you think about this issue?
Well, I'm sure your listeners are certainly aware of, you know, the broad spectrum of affordable housing and what, you know, what all it means, anywhere from, you know, a moderate AMI that you know, 30 to 80% AMI, all the way down to your, you know, your full on subsidized housing. So it kind of covers that broad spectrum. Ultimately, it's something that we grapple with here locally. It's something that cities across the nation are grappling with. But the city of Wilmington is only 52 square miles, and it's one of the most desirable places to live in the Southeast and maybe the nation. Consistently, we're topping national charts on best places to live, and so people are certainly coming here. The growth that we've experienced over the last decade has been significant, to say the least, not just in Wilmington, but in the greater Wilmington area. And that kind of demand has severely outpaced supply, which directly relates to the affordability issues that we see today. The city has made significant investments. We've dedicated roughly 1 cent, about $3 million a year, to an affordable housing fund. And that's something that that we've utilized to leverage with low-income housing tax credit developers, folks who are, you know, providing some form of workforce housing with the city. And it's been fairly successful. It's resulted in a lot of affordable units. I don't know the exact number over the last 4 years, but we've seen a lot of projects come through that have been leveraged with that money. But I've been a proponent that we're not going to tax our way into housing affordability. A study by a National Association for Home Builders said that roughly 40%, up to 40% of the cost of producing a unit, a housing unit, typically a multifamily housing unit, is regulation. And so that can vary, obviously. I think we're probably more in the 20% for a lot of stuff that we're doing. So I'd like to see the city do a little better job of streamlining our regulatory processes to reduce some of those unnecessary costs and hopefully, you know, pass that on to the consumer. But at the same token, a lot of the most vocal proponents of affordable housing and investing more in affordable housing are equally as vocal about preserving our tree canopy. And so we have to find a way to marry those two things because it's very important, and I'm sure we'll get to that a little bit. There's a saying I like, show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome. I'm afraid the more I look at it, that a lot of our current tree ordinances actually directly incentivize developers to clear cut and cut down trees, which is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, so this is definitely on our list. So let's get into the the green space and development thing, because I think this is all kind of a piece. We have definitely seen the cost of, you know, cutting down old growth trees and replanting newer trees just baked into a development. It doesn't seem, especially if you are, I'm not trying to be a pejorative, but it seems like if you are not from here as a developer, and this is just kind of an abstract penciling out issue, I mean, from a business point of view, it totally makes sense. You're like, it would cost this versus it would cost that.
Well, I can break it down for you a little bit because I've done tried to do a deep dive over the last year on this. I'm trying to wrap my head around it a little bit better as we move into this because it's one of the top issues other than affordability. Preserving green space is just probably what I hear anecdotally more than anything.
Same for us. I mean, I think people want more places to live. They don't want to live in a concrete, you know, just jungle.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened on Reisel Avenue recently with those oak trees with that big apartment, I mean, that the Galleria, that should have never happened. I was angry when it did. But in kind of what I'm seeing is that we have basically, if there's a significant tree, like a big live oak tree, and a develop, they have we have a critical root zone that, you know, is basically the drip line of the tree. But then there's this arbitrary number that we put on it at the city, and so you can't go, let's call it 120 feet circle around that tree. If you need a road or any infrastructure to go inside of that 120 foot, which is a big radius, right? Inside of that, you have to pay a mitigation fee as if you killed the tree, even if you saved the tree. What's the incentive there for a developer not to say, all right, well, we need to increase density because we're getting a density bonus anyway if we add some affordability. So we're paying for this tree as if we killed it, even though we're not killing it. So let's cut it down and make our lives easier. There's some things we've got to tighten up in the code specific to that if we truly want to preserve our tree canopy and also continue to, you know, provide affordable housing or housing in general. As a for instance, Lumina Station, you know, one of the most beautiful kind of commercial, all the beautiful oak trees that are integrated into that could not be built under today's code. Right. They would have to pay for every single one of those trees as if they killed them. That's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, an anecdote from years ago, but I was on the phone with the people involved, was that the developer of the Publix in Ogden was initially thinking about just clear-cutting everything, and some local activists took them to look at the Lumina Station. That's mm-hmm. that business park off of Eastwood on the way to Wrightsville Beach, and then took them to the Kmart, the now vacant Kmart, and basically showed them the square foot value. And said, Lumina Station, double, maybe triple what the Kmart station is. And it's because it's a gorgeous space. But to your point, yeah, now none of that parking lot would be permitted to be put in now.
You could put it in, but you'd still have to pay for every single tree.
Yeah.
I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, up to millions of dollars, as if you killed those trees. And that, even if you're saving them and doing your best to, you know, to work around them, which I think that's what we should be promoting, is, you know, thoughtful development that works through our existing tree canopy.
Yeah. So a related issue to that, and this is the other part I hear, as much as I hear people clamoring for more affordable housing, which from a supply and demand point of view means more units, is also I have yet to see a larger multifamily project proposed without pushback, without people saying development's out of control in Wilmington and our region writ large. So how do you walk that tightrope where you're trying to say, like, all right, the market is demanding stuff. We have certain buy right developments and certain reasonable requests from developers, but also people feel like they are every week losing some of the character of this place.
Well, I I agree with him to a certain extent. I don't think we need to build on every square inch of this city. I think there's some places that high density development is reasonable and probably what we want, specifically in the in the downtown area where the city purchased the Skyline building and we're selling parcels around that. I'd love to see all of that be dense, beautiful tall buildings that's kind of are coming around there. It makes sense there. Aesthetically, it makes sense there. But packing in the most dense things that we can do in a lot of these neighborhoods is something I think I've kind of seen enough. And as it continues, yes, it actually does depress the affordability. You're kind of seeing rents drop off a little bit. They're not just climbing up like they were in 2021, 22. We've seen a plateau and even a little decrease, and that's directly related to the supply. But we have to kind of juggle what the community really wants and who we want to be. And so there's certainly going to be a lot more adaptive reuse. There's going to be, some infill development where you've got 2, 3, 4, 6 unit townhomes. That to me is organically creating affordability while also working through the quality of life that we want the city resident to have.
I'm curious because this is not split along partisan lines at all. But just in terms of Wilmington's downtown skyline, do you feel like people are ready for, skyscrapers would be a bit much, but for like a more robust skyline?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guy, you probably know McKay Siegel told us once at a housing forum that if we're up to him, he would build like 1 mile tall building, like a Burj Dubai, and then leave everything else green.
You turn McKay loose and who knows what's going to happen.
That's true. All right. So last question we have about housing, and this is sort of the bottom end of the housing spectrum, is homelessness. Mm-hmm. Something no one has been talking about at all recently.
Certainly.
So what is your take on this?
As your listeners and you are certainly aware, this is a major issue in our city and it's a growing issue in our city. We have a truly compassionate community. I believe that and I'm thankful for that. That's a good thing. We have a constellation of nonprofits that the city funds. We have affordability components that the city funds. Those nonprofits are well equipped to offer services to homeless in our city, the people who want it. I'm currently working to utilize some of the aforementioned affordable housing fund to build additional units for the homelessness with Eden Village. I mean, they're doing some incredible stuff there, and I don't think they get enough support. I aim to change that. Simultaneously, though, it's my position that the city owes it to everyone to prioritize public safety. I recently put forward a public camping ordinance, as I'm sure you're aware, to council, and after lengthy, I think almost a 2-hour discussion, sometimes heated discussion, we tabled it until the first meeting of September. I believe the mayor tabled it and it was seconded. I opposed that. But this is not a novel concept that I was proposing. In 2024, the Supreme Court ruled that municipalities can create ordinances governing public camping. Since that time, according to my research, over 150 cities across 32 states have enacted public camping ordinance, basically rushing to do something that they needed to do. 42 of those cities are in the state of California. I believe one of them is San Francisco. I mean, folks who have been really, really critically experiencing issues with homelessness over the last decade plus are saying, okay, we understand we have a compassionate community. We want to try and help. But at the same time, we've got to preserve our public spaces. We've got to prioritize public safety in our streets, our sidewalks, our businesses. Deserve to be clean space or clean and safe spaces for everyone.
So I do want to ask, I don't want to spend the whole time talking about this because I've got a lot of issues to get to, but I'm curious, when I talk to law enforcement, they don't necessarily have any problem with the ordinance you put forward. Mm-hmm. I think one of the concerns is that people will think, and I'm not saying this is your intent, but that people will think that this is a silver bullet.
So it's not.
And if it doesn't work, that they will then turn to the police department, WPD, and say, why are you guys not cleaning up Wilmington?
Well, I'm going to take the chief evangelist's recommendation. He said this is another tool in the tool belt that we need. It condenses a lot of ordinances that are spread out throughout city code, and it also adds a couple more that give them some tools that they need to be able to keep public spaces safe and clean. To me, hearing that from the chief is a full-on we're going in the right direction, but also that peer cities across the nation are looking at doing this and are implementing it quickly. To me, it's a no-brainer. We're not reinventing the wheel here. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can prioritize public safety in this city and also be a compassionate community that offers services to people who need it and want it.
In terms of those services, because I totally agree that's part of the issue, because if you can, I mean, the ordinance is a class 3 misdemeanor, so you're giving someone a citation. Hopefully they show up at court 4 or 5 months later. But under the most extreme interpretation of the structured sentencing, maybe they're getting 10 days in a detention center, cost the county $1,000, and they're back on the street. If you can't use that to leverage people into services, maybe when they're a bit recalcitrant, right, about going into a sober shelter or accepting help or whatever that is, I've also heard that there is just a shortage of those services. There's lots of people out there doing the work, but I've heard that we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough social workers. And I know that some people are frustrated because they feel like we have been putting financial resources on the table for 17 years of our 10-year plan to end homelessness. And they, you know, they made progress, and then Florence was a setback. They made progress with COVID funds, and now we're seeing sort of more setbacks. I mean, do you feel like there's the political will or the public will to keep putting financial resources into this issue?
Again, we are. I mean, the city is. We're investing a serious amount of money, taxpayer dollars, into this issue. I don't think it's fair for the citizens of the city of Wilmington or New Hanover County, for that matter, to shoulder the entirety of the burden here. We have counties on either side who are most certainly utilizing our services. And I believe outside of those two counties, I mean, we heard it directly from Chief Evangelist on last Tuesday night. He said about 50% of the people that he's talked to in the last 30 days that the Wilmington Police Department had interactions with, about 50% of them were not from here. I'd never heard that. It's always been anecdotally discussed, but it's been largely dismissed by a lot of people in the community who work in that industry. And it was refreshing to hear, because it's something that I truly believe. And he said, when we asked all of them, hey, why are you here? They said, well, it's because of your services. So I think there's some discussion there. We need to make sure that the people that we are taking care of, while we certainly want to be a compassionate community for everyone, the people that we're taking care of and the tax dollars that we represent for the city of Wilmington and certainly New Hanover County as well, are actually helping the people who live here.
Yeah, I will say about 2/3 of the people from New Hanover County, with another large chunk from Pender and Brunswick, there is about like 25-ish% where we don't know where these people are from, and I certainly think it's plausible that they're from outside. I know law enforcement also spends a lot of time dealing with people who are dealing with substance abuse. And I have heard, like you, a lot of anecdotal evidence that people have come to the Wilmington area because there are a number of, well, there's a whole range of recovery services, from the high-end clinical stuff to the sort of bare bones, you know, Oxford House style, where it's just, you know, you're paying a minimal rent.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's faith-based, and it's not as expensive as, or radically less expensive than the clinical stuff. But people deliberately come to Wilmington because it is far away from whatever people, places, and things were, you know, part of their addiction in the first place. So I've definitely heard that. I think there's like this zombie myth that, you know, busloads of people are coming here from California. But I take your point.
Yeah, and I think people have been bused here. I mean, I don't know if it's happened in the last four years since I've been involved, but I have heard from very credible people that that in the past other municipalities, not in North Carolina that I know about, we're sending their people directly here.
I've heard the stories of Myrtle Beach PD sending people here on buses. I've also heard stories of us sending them back.
Who knows?
Or churches here sending people to family around.
Well, there's a term in it's called rapid rehousing, and that's really important. It's something you can that we should invest a lot in of our resources. You know, and certainly getting people housing here is great, but also rapid rehousing is a way that you can connect somebody with their direct resources, their family, whether it's here or wherever it is. But if you can do that first, I mean, that should be a priority.
Yeah, I agree with that. I certainly think one of the things the county has been talking about is, you know, looking at the funding situation, because right now there's really no budget for either nonprofits or law enforcement to take people back to where they're from if that's something they want to do. There's just no money for that. I mean, that's expensive. So, all right. I do want to move on because we got a lot.
Please.
That's something to get to. I want to talk about economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So this could mean a lot of different things, like affordable housing. I think on one end, you've got sort of direct incentive type things, like the you know, the packages that were put together for PPD or Live Oak or National Gypsum. And then there's sort of the more, you know, soft power approach, where it's maybe you take a business, maybe you reach out to a business owner or a business leader and bring them to Wilmington, take them to a concert, take them to the beach, and sort of hope that they will on their own figure, hey, this is a pretty good place to start up a business. So all that being under that umbrella, like, how do you think about economic development from the city's point of view?
Well, you know, I want us to have a robust economic climate in the city of Wilmington and in the greater Wilmington area. I think that's important for many reasons, and I'm sure we'll talk about all of them and to what end the city can affect that and be helpful. I'm all for it. I think we've seen some real ROI in the investments that we've made, you know, just that were pretty small investments, but, you know, to PPD and Live Oak and these kind of companies that have grown right here at home. And just, you know, blossomed into some beautiful things that provide incredible jobs for the people here. I saw on a report the other day that basically, I think over the last 10 years, our economy has gone from about 40% hospitality now down to 16%. So we're a lot more robust in our opportunities, and I think that's a good thing. Mostly, I think we can just be a conduit to success for business, make it a nice, easy place to come do business. Obviously, it's a beautiful place if you're looking to, bring your business from elsewhere, and we have seen that. And then we've got wonderful organizations like Wilmington Business Development and Chamber of Commerce who do an incredible job of reaching out to the broader community, the broader business community, and saying, hey, we're open for business. Wilmington's here, and it's a great place to do it. Here's the airport. Here's, you know, nonstop flights we have. Here's the beaches. I mean, they do a wonderful job of kind of painting that picture of what a great place we have to live and do business. And I think leaning into the folks that we have here now, who have been very successful and telling those stories is you know about the best we can do.
Do you feel like this is space for the city to help support like much smaller businesses? I know. Some municipalities and counties, you know, are kind of like the big whale, the big game hunters. Mm-hmm. And some people have a philosophy where, like, they're looking more at mom and pops.
I think we can do that by, you know, decreasing regulatory burdens on opening businesses. You know, not necessarily being a seed investor on a small business. I started my business, with nothing. And the biggest elephant in the room when you're starting a business is, am I checking all the boxes from a regulatory standpoint? So if we can kind of lessen that burden for our small businesses, that's a win in my book.
So let me ask you about this. It's a part of economic development because over the last 20 years, I've seen huge changes and improvement in economic strength in Wilmington. It hasn't been equal. There's certainly parts of Wilmington that are much more successful and affluent than other parts. One of the questions we get all the time is, you know, there's clear economic and racial inequality in Wilmington, but does the city have a role in addressing that? And if so, what do you think that role is?
I think we certainly have a role in equality. I would say that a rising tide lifts all ships, though it doesn't necessarily disperse everything equally. We should make sure that the city of Wilmington is focused on equality and that we are offering equal representation to our employment, certainly. As far as, you know, investing directly, I guess I'm kind of like a little bit confused on the question. Are you asking if the city should be like directly investing in a certain sector?
Well, yeah. I mean, let me sharpen that up a little bit. There's been some people who've suggested that the city should, and I think there are some existing programs already, but should continue to invest or invest more in minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, whether that's a revolving fund or what. I'm talking about direct sort of investments in underrepresented parts of the economy.
Yeah, I think that when you're starting a business, it's important that you, just like in life, that you take agency for the situation that you're in and not look to the government as a bit of a crutch with which to lean on. We should make it a good, easy place with decreased, you know, regulatory burden for business as a whole. But I mean, I was a first generation college graduate. Were you?
No, second generation.
Yeah, my point is, there's all sorts of different things that, like, I've heard that first generation college graduate. I didn't even know that was a thing until I heard it recently. I was like, I'm one of those. I had a lot of opportunities maybe that other folks didn't have. I had, you know, two loving parents at home who worked very hard and you know, still married and raised me in a loving household. I mean, I had a lot of, I'm very lucky and blessed in that way. But there's a spectrum of opportunity out there, but we all have to take agency for the situation that we're in, especially if you're starting a business. Once you're starting a business, I think the sooner you realize that I'm on my own and nobody's coming to save me, the more successful you're going to be.
All right, fair enough. I want to move on to public safety, something we've talked about before. And the city is going to be announcing a new police chief relatively soon. We're recording this on the 14th, so I think in the next couple of weeks.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And so, I mean, some people feel like anytime you got a new change of leadership, it's always a chance to stop, reevaluate, think about the things you want to double down on, reinvest in, things that you might want to do differently. So how do you think about public safety right now, and where would you like to see that go?
I am excited about this new police chief to breathe some fresh blood and new vision into the Wilmington Police Department at a time where I think it's desperately needed. I believe we're at 211 sworn officers. I think 278 is the number that we're supposed to be at, maybe 280. So, I mean, we're about 70-some officers down. That's a lot of the public safety issues that we've seen over the last couple of years, I think, are directly related to that. Culture is I believe, a major part of that. Also pay. I think the city of Wilmington, I'm done playing patty cake with all the rest of the municipalities. So if you're listening, the rest of the municipalities, we're coming for you. I think it's time that we lead. I mean, we are the economic engine for this region, and our police department should lead the way as far as pay. Not just pay, though. I think we've really kind of missed the boat on is retention. And what I hope to see is a serious plan for retention bonuses for our folks who've been here a while. Costs a lot more to train a new police officer than to keep these veteran ones that we've had for a long time. I was a big proponent of transparency in their promotional structure, some increase in pay, which we did last year. I still don't think we're benchmarked really, but this is probably my highest priority rolling into this next 4 years.
I've definitely heard the concern that it definitely costs more to, you know, train someone new than to keep someone. But also, from both law enforcement and the public, I hear a real concern about the loss of institutional knowledge. If the senior officer on the scene of a homicide, you know, has only a few more years' experience than the most junior corporal on the scene, like, that's going to cause liability issues. Is going to cause bad turnout, you know, bad outcomes for the investigations.
Couldn't agree more. I think we've really got to lean in and invest heavily on this. It's something that I will be beating the drum on. I've been beating the drum, I'm sure you've been following, you know, for the last couple of years, because these folks are coming to me saying, listen, we're sounding the alarm here. We need help at the police department. I think I want them to know that we heard them. We're making those changes. We're doing what's necessary to keep the city of Wilmington safe and the Wilmington Police Department operationally efficient.
As a follow-up, in terms of the policing style, for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been very heavily focused on community policing. Are you thinking about like a major change in the way WPD operates, or more just in terms of, you know, restaffing back up and maybe repairing morale a little bit?
Yeah, I don't want to get too micro on this because I don't think it's fair to me as a councilman to kind of dictate how an incoming police chief will operate. I want to give him some latitude, him or her, some latitude to come in here.
You're not the first council person to slip up, so don't worry.
To come in here and work with our new city manager, Becky Hawk, who's phenomenal, hit the ground running. I mean, she is an absolute firecracker for this city, and I couldn't be more excited to have her here. But have them kind of start working closely together. I think we'll see a plan really quickly, and hopefully to staff back up, get to operational readiness, and continue doing the good work the Wilmington Police Department does. But I don't think it's fair for me to kind of dictate what that looks like, and certainly don't want to micromanage before somebody even comes in the door.
One more part of public safety I want to ask about, and it's not been as high profile, and that's the fire department. And I have heard maybe less vocal, maybe less drastic concerns about morale, but very similar concerns about retention and recruiting. And to your point, a kind of a similar, you know, arms race with other, you know, other counties, other municipalities, other departments to try and keep some of the best folks on that department.
Look, I love the men and women of the Wilmington Fire Department, and I try and get over there as much as I can. My 2-year-old Luke Jr. likes to look at the fire trucks and thinks it's the coolest thing in the world. And I try. They do incredible work for this community. I mean, when something bad happens, they are there. So I was a big proponent of getting their pay increased as well. Looking into this next year, they do not have the staffing capacity issues that we're seeing at Wilmington Police Department. So for me, it's a real I can see where the priority is. You can see where the crime is increasing. I know that a lot of people say, hey, violent crime was down last year. It was down by like a murder or two, which is great. But property crime was up 21% year over year. And that was the highest year-over-year increase of any city in the state. So we got to address this. And this needs to be a priority. It needs to be an all-hands-on-deck initiative.
So here's our last policy question, and that's about public transportation, which is, you know, in some ways related to, you know, housing and a lot of other stuff. But, you know, for years, the city has been the most stalwart local funder of WAVE. They get a lot of federal money, but the county's been in, the county's been out. There's some debate about what their role is and should be. And I think right now they're being fairly supportive from a financial point of view. But how do you feel about how WAVE is performing right now and acknowledging that they have their own board, they're their own agency?
Yeah.
Where would you like to see that go?
I'm not on that board. I have not been, you know, really involved other than, you know, the passing a budget that subsidizes that organization. I think ridership is pretty low. It's really not utilized very, very often. All that being said, when I was running 4 years ago, you know, I probably even had a more reductive view of public transportation. It's not something I utilize every day or ever. And but I saw every day a gentleman who was coming, getting dropped off. He had pretty severely handicapped, and he was going to work every day, and that's how he got to work. And it smacked me in the face that there is a segment of our population here who is trying to go to work, who is trying to, you know, just do what they can do, live their life, and they rely on WAVE exclusively. To me, I think we could get a little more tailored, a little more narrowly focused to those individuals, and not have maybe lean in a little bit more to the micro transit portion. Because really these giant buses that have one or two people, in them, the math doesn't work. Not that it's supposed to be a big money maker, even if it was a small subsidy, I get it because it does serve a purpose that I see, but I'd like to see a little more narrowly focused, approach on how we do it. And I think microtransit is likely a good way to do that.
All right. Well, those are our policy questions. I want to give you an opportunity. Anything I didn't bring up, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I always appreciate the time, Ben. Hopefully do it a little more. But I appreciate the listeners taking the time to listen to what we have to say. If you want to know more about me, lukeforwilmington.com, or you can call me. I think I put my phone number out there, 910-599-7081. Always happy to talk to the people that I represent. Certainly look forward to the election in November.
Bold putting your personal number out there.
I've been doing it for 4 years.
I did it when I started as a journalist, and my wife loves it that I've done that.
Mine too.
All right. Well, Luke Waddell, candidate for re-election to City Council of Wilmington. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Ben. Enjoyed it.
That was our interview with Republican incumbent Luke Waddell, who's running for re-election to Wilmington's City Council. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening to this special edition of The Newsroom. And check out our other candidate interviews at whqr.org or wherever you get The Newsroom as a podcast.